The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Incomparable, number 616, May 2022.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I'm your host, Jason Snell. This is an episode of our book club. We're going to talk about some books. I got nominated for some awards. That's right. It's Shortlist Book Club 2022 edition, part two of three. So let me introduce my panelists who read these books, and now we'll do what is our tradition, struggle to remember them. Aline Sims is here. Hello.
I read these ones.
Yay. You weren't on part one, but you're back for part
no.
two.
Yep. I'm back.
Rest assured. It's all good. Dan Morin, also not part of part one, but just parachuting in here with Aline for part two. Hi, Dan.
The characters who show up in part two are always the best characters.
That's right.
Yeah. You're our Avasarala.
Exactly. Nailed it.
Sure. Aline, you're our Bobby then. See?
Yes.
Equal opportunity. That's pretty great. Great. We're going to high five over here.
Scott is here. He's always here. Scott McNulty. Hello.
Hello. Who am I?
You're just a guy who reads books.
I thought I might be an Expanse character.
You're a guy with a space fedora.
I'm an extra in the background.
You're a guy with you're a guy with a space fedora. I've got bad news for you, though, after this episode.
Oh, no. Nothing could go wrong with me. Nope. I have a hat, and I'm in space.
That's right.
I've only read the first half of that book.
And and Erica Ensign is also here. You can be Naomi. It's fine.
I've only read the first book. At least I got through the whole book.
So there you go. What Expanse character are you?
Yeah, but I've read all of these books.
And I'm Fred Johnson. So there. Oh,
yeah. You're also great
Not
then.
Not going to make it maybe, but yeah. Spoilers for a very long book series.
Wow.
We didn't read any Expanse books for this. We are reading nominees from the shortlists of the Hugo and Nebula Awards, and we're splitting the difference in this one, because we're going to talk about The Unbroken by C.L. Clarke, which was a Nebula nominee. We're going to talk about A Master of Jinn by P. J. Lee Clarke, which was a Nebula and Hugo nominee. And we're going to speak about The Galaxy and the Ground Within by Becky Chambers, which was a Hugo nominee. So one from each and one from both. So there.
That's how you do it traditionally.
Now we did an entire episode, I believe, about The Galaxy and the Ground Within. Did we not?
I believe so.
So
I think so. I don't even remember that.
I was
Jason.
Not there. I'm pretty sure.
You know, before we started this episode, we discussed how some podcasts are very prepared.
You know what we say to those people? Screw you.
Well, I know I talked about The Galaxy and the Ground Within on Recently Read, and I can find that. I'm not sure if we've devoted an episode to it or not.
We haven't. It was just Recently Read.
I believe that you spoke about it in the What Are We Reading
What Are We
section?
Reading?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I think been that covered sounds a few right, times
I,
there.
I feel like I remember it being discussed, but not on a...
Right.
Like a,
well, let's discuss it now at least a little bit, shall we? It's Becky Chambers. It's her Wayfarer series. It's what she says is the last one. We did talk about it in previous episodes at least a little bit. For me, the short version of it is it's a book where nothing happens. There's like a ground control thing on a planet and everybody has to park their spaceships and hang out and wait for the traffic to clear. And if this sounds like it's boring, It's not.
It's not.
It's wonderfully sort of, there's, it's sort of episodic, like a lot of her stuff. It's got some wonderfully drawn characters, and it really is, you know, can you write a really interesting, affecting, beautiful novel where a bunch of characters are just, I think the answer is actually pretty obvious. You put a bunch of interesting characters together, mm-hmm. and they can't go anywhere, and they just kind of have to, you know, talk to each other, and interesting things happen, and that's what Galaxy in the Ground Within is. And I thought it was wonderful, and it's one of my favorite books I read last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting because I was always going to read it, and I always thought I would like it because I've enjoyed all the rest of the Wayfarers books, but I think the one that came out just before this one was, like, I enjoyed it, but it was sort of my least favorite of them. And hearing you, Jason, say it's a book where nothing happens and it's amazing and wonderful, I was like, okay, so this is probably going to be one that I enjoy, but I don't super love the way I kind of love the first couple of books. And guess what? I was totally wrong because you were right. Nothing happens and it is so amazing. I think sometimes the action and the excitement in a book takes all the air out of the room, so you don't have as much time for the kind of delicate and beautiful and intimate, just, you know, sitting around type character moments that this book is completely full of. And I love those moments, even in a book with a lot of action. And I don't know that I've ever read anything that is really just almost entirely those moments. And now I want to read lots of things that are like that. And so if anybody out there has read this book and knows of other similar things, please send those recommendations my way, because I'm not aware of things like that, and I would like to be aware of more of them.
Send your books where nothing happens to Erica.
I think yes, what's please. Interesting about it is that even though nothing happens, and some things do happen, it's not a plot-driven book in the basis sense. But I think what it captures is something that's actually very real, and that's what makes it resonate so much. Is like, if you've ever, say, traveled and been like in a place where you met strangers and you had like a, you know, you, I'm thinking about like if you get stuck someplace, like, you, oh man, we're snowed in at this inn, or mm-hmm. I think about traveling in like youth hostels, like when I was, you know, traveling in Europe when I was like in my 20s, and like you meet people that you form a temporary bond with that you're like, oh, you know, we're all in this together. And like we are sort of forced together in a like small location or whatever. I was like on a bus trip in Ireland once with, you know, a dozen other people that I didn't know, but you become very close like over this small course of period, and then you kind of go your separate ways, and it has a big impact on you, but it's not like these are people that you knew for a long period of time. And I think that sort of harkens to that idea to me of you can form these very strong bonds over something like a shared experience. And I think that's what makes it a beautiful, lovely book, is that it is something that I think you can relate to, even if you have never been stuck in a refueling place in space before. There is still something about it.
Have you?
Only once.
Okay.
I don't like to talk about it.
No.
But I think it taps into something that's sort of essential in like a humanity sort of way. And I mean, the best science fiction often does. And so I think that sort of character driven element to me, it really worked for me. And I agree with Erica. I liked the other books. The previous one was also my least favorite. I think maybe just because it was very focused on mortality, and that's just sometimes like, oh, I don't need this right now. But I've enjoyed her writing is tremendous and amazing. And this whole series is great, but this is far and away my favorite, I think, of all of them. I just, it blew me away. I read it, I think, on vacation last year, and I just devoured it. Like, you know, I read it in like, I don't know, a day or two. So it's great. It's fantastic.
It's funny that you mentioned humanity, because all the characters are aliens. There is a minor character,
I had that thought,
very late in the book, who is a human. And if this is truly Becky Chambers' last book in this universe, one of the things that I like is that it allows her to bring out her parade of very interesting different aliens with their different mm-hmm. cultures, and has them interacting with each other, with the humans kind of off the board. And because the humans are sort of at the fore of the other books in the series, and this is all about the aliens. And yeah, it's incredibly.
But even well though done. They're alien, there's something recognizable
course,
in them of us. Exactly. Yeah.
Because that's all good science fiction is like that. Also, I think, as we've established on the book club before, planets are in space. And so therefore, if you spend a lot of time at a gas station, you've spent a lot of time in a fueling station in space. I'm just saying.
Accurate. That is accurate.
I guess that's fair.
Scott, how'd you feel about this one?
I liked it a lot. I will say that of the three, this is my favorite. I like the whole series. I am reminded by looking at Goodreads that the series won the Hugo Award for Best Series, which I have problems with the fact that that award exists, but not for problems for the fact that this won. So it was a lot of fun. I read it a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't remember much about it. I remember there was a delivery of baked goods that or something like that had catastrophic consequences. And that's a bit all I remember about.
That's good memory, though. That absolutely happens. There is a DoorDash that gone horribly wrong in space, on a planet in space. Aline?
So the thing about this book is that it brought to the forefront the thing I loved about the first book of the series, which was Becky Chambers' ability to create believable alien races, and relatable to humans, alien races, and not just one, not just two, but like a whole broad swath of very alien races. It's not like, you know, like Star Trek, like, okay, well, we'll put a spoon on their forehead and make them like the heat and make them kind of aggressive. And otherwise, they're pretty much human, right? Like, they're very, very different from people. Not people, from humanity. And so I love that. And so when I read this series, I am always just gobsmacked, specifically the first book and this book. I'm just gobsmacked by her imagination and her ability to write amazing, believable, charismatic characters I love. And, you know, I say it, I think, every single book club episode. I am about characters. If I can't like the characters in a book, I'm not going to like the book. If a book is more about the machinations of war or battles or whatever, which we're going to talk about a later book, I'm not going to like it so much. And so I loved this book, even though not a lot happens. I fell in love with it. I fell in love with all of these characters. And Aline's audiobook narrator review, she was so good. The narrator was so, so, so good. And it added another, it was just like icing on the cake for this particular novel, because it was just such good voices. Like, I don't do voices, but I love it when my audiobook narrators do voices. So it's wonderful. The characters are lovable. I don't know. It's good. Read it.
Yeah.
Read it. Like,
just read it.
Just read it.
When we say nothing happens, I mean, we're kind of being funny here. Like, because as Dan said, lots of drama can come out of a bunch of people just trapped in a location together. And that's what this is. But what it is not is a science fiction. It's set in a science fictional space opera-esque universe, but that's not what this book is. This book is about the interplay of characters and cultures as embodied in these characters, and them learning about each other when they're, you know, stuck down on this planet together. So what it isn't is a rollicking adventure where there's an antagonist who's doing terrible things. Like, it's not, that's not what it is. It's a bunch of people who have to learn about each other and live together in for a brief time while they're kind of waiting out the traffic jam that is happening in space around them. And it's not that nothing happens, and it's certainly not boring, but it's not being driven by incident. It is about the characters. There is an incident in it, but it's like,
trying to fix it or overcome the incident. Yeah. They're just kind of waiting.
And that incident
involves
baked goods being delivered by mistake. So it's that kind of, just to give you an idea.
Yeah, Jason, you make a good point too, that there's no antagonist. And I do find that quite often I like books and stories where the antagonist is just the situation. And that's kind of what this is. And the situation really isn't even an antagonist here. It's just, you know, it sort of propels things. I'd say propels things forward, but it basically propels things nowhere because yeah. they're not allowed to go anywhere.
Anything more about the Galaxy and the Ground Within, or should we move on?
Because just really, read it.
Yeah, just read it's it. Just it's so really good. Even if you like, so listen good. To that description and are like, oh, I don't know, that sounds like a book that's boring. Trust me.
It's not boring.
It's really good.
Yeah. Good job, Hugo. Nominator people.
I was going to say Mr. Hugo.
Mr. Hugo. Good, Victor good Hugo. Pick. The ghost of Victor Hugo who comes emerges every year and says, I'm into science fiction now.
I did put this on my ballot, so you're welcome.
Okay, thank you, Erica. Specifically, Erica.
That's right.
Is your middle name Hugo?
It's not.
Interesting.
It's Booberry.
Specifically.
Time to take a little break for a sponsor. This episode of The Incomparable is brought to you in part by Collide. Collide sends employees important, timely, and relevant security recommendations for their Mac, Linux, and Windows devices all right inside of Slack. It's perfect for organizations that care deeply about compliance and security, but don't want to get there by locking down devices to the point where they become unusable. That will frustrate your team, and Collide doesn't want to do that. It wants to educate your employees about security and device management while directing them to fix important problems themselves. Collide knows that for IT admins, the key to solving some of the most common security issues is to educate the end user. So for example, they can instruct developers to set passphrases on their unencrypted SSH keys, or find plain text two-factor backup codes on the system and teach the end users how to store those securely. Or imagine encouraging employees to uninstall some bad browser extensions that they may have installed that might compromise their security when they're in their web browser. Those are just some of the use cases that are not solved by simply locking down a device. Now, you can try Collide with all its features on an unlimited number of devices for free for 14 days with no credit card required. That's right. Try it out at collide.com/snell. That's right. That's my last name. You heard it. KOLIDE.com/SNELL. And if you enter your email when prompted, you'll get a free Collide gift bundle after trial activation. Thank you to Collide for supporting The Incomparable. Now, back to the podcast. Let's talk about A Master of Gin by P. Jaylee Clark. This is from the, The Haunting of Train Car.
Tram Car 19, I believe.
015.
It was 015.
It's the Dead Djinn universe. This is set in Cairo and thereabouts, in a world where there has been in the early 20th century, late 19th century, a breakthrough in terms of magic that has basically brought the djinn back to Egypt, and it's made Egypt a power in the early 20th century. And amidst all of this, basically, P. Jaylee Clark has a couple of different protagonists that he uses who work for the Ministry of Alchemy, Enchantments, and Supernatural Entities. This book is about Fatma, who is the youngest woman working on this squad and one of the few women involved in the police force. And
not the police, the spooky police, basically.
Well, I was going to say, it's basically like she's like
they also
the
have
X-Files. Yes, this is the spooky police. They're the magic police. So basically, she's the supernatural police. And these stories are all kind of structured in a mystery slash detective cop kind of a story. But of course, there's a lot more to it because there's magic. And in this case, a shocking opening scene where somebody breaks into a meeting of kind of wealthy, well-off men and one woman, I think, and murders them all supernaturally. And the rumor is that the one of the greatest men in history, Al-Jahiz, has returned from the dead. He's the guy who brought the djinn back. He's returned from the dead and is going to take over because this modern 20th century Cairo is not going to work, and he's going to have to usher in his old school mores and old school ways, but is it really him come back from the dead? Is that possible, or is there more going on here? And that's the story of a master of djinn, is Fatma having to figure out, she's saddled with a new partner in another one of those nice cop story things, a very spunky new partner. She's got a girlfriend who's got a complicated backstory. There's a lot going on in this book. Who would like to talk about it first?
I'll go first. I did just finish it not too long ago. And we've read some of the other stories that are in this universe, and none of them particularly, I don't know, I didn't love them, in part because I'm not a huge fan of alternate history, and I'm also not a huge fan of like steampunky stuff.
This setting has both.
Yep. But for some reason, I hit my critical mass. I needed to read a certain number of stories set in this universe to really just sort of get it to resonate with me. And I don't know if it was that or if it was just that this particular story hit me better than the rest of them. But I really enjoyed Agent Fatma a lot. And one of the things I liked a lot was the way that this world and this city really felt very developed to me because of how she had to interact with all of the different levels of society and also the police, which is one of the reasons I was pointing out, like, she's not a police officer because Cairo police officer Asim is somebody that she has to interact with again and again throughout the book. And I really liked him as a character, just sort of like a matter of fact, like, he's a cop. He just wants to get the job done and does not understand what it is that she does, but he trusts her. And I find that that's a thing that that kind of goes throughout the book, is that she knows a lot of people throughout the city of Cairo in a lot of different places, you know, with the underground jazz club. They recognize her. They know her name there. She's got this police officer that she's buds with. She knows, djinn in different areas. She's good pals. Well, she's not good pals with the librarian that's in charge of the library because he's a snob. But it felt like a really lived in city in a lived in story with a character who knew where she belongs in the world and is just trying to get the job done. And I don't know if there was another story where Fatma and Siti, like, because they keep talking about taking down an angel.
Yeah,
and I don't think I read that.
I think that's a dead djinn in Cairo. Or is
it's the first one, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, I read that, but it was a long time ago.
I don't think I had read that, but I appreciated how it was referred to in a way that gave me enough information to recognize this is a story that I could go back and read if I wanted to. And I didn't feel like I was missing anything important enough that I had to go back and read it in order to understand what was happening in this book. So I may go back and check it out now, and I might not. And even if I don't, I feel like I still understood everything that was happening in this book. And I actually mentioned this book on an episode of my Doctor Who podcast, Verity, because we were doing a question and answer episode, and somebody asked, what costume would you like for the next Doctor in Doctor Who to wear? And this is before we knew who the next actor was going to be to play the Doctor. And the first thing that popped into my head was Agent Fatma, and how every single day she's wearing a different suit. And there is a specific description of the suit that she is wearing, because she wears tailored men's suits and often a bowler cap and a sword cane. And it not only describes what she's wearing, but often why she made those choices, whether she was, you know, feeling like she wanted a little pop of color for some specific reason, or if she just wanted to, you know, keep things a little bit more cool so that, you know, she could blend into the crowd a little bit more, even though it was clear she was never going to blend into a crowd because she's just way too stylish. And after Shuti Gatwa was cast as the next Doctor, I was like, yes, I would like to stand by my choice to just have the next Doctor wearing tailored suits from, you know, roughly 1912 in their American style suits. So I get bored by descriptions of clothing, but for some reason that did not bother me at all in this. And I just, it fit with everything and it flowed. And I think I kind of didn't care all that much about the plot. I was just really interested in the way that she lived her life and the city that she was wandering around in. I would kind of go back and forth between being interested in the plot and then less interested in what was happening. And then mostly I just wanted her to wander around and go to jazz clubs and talk to people. Mm. So yeah, it was still worth reading, but not for the plot for me, I guess.
Yeah, I read this a while ago, and as is my wont, I don't recall most of the plot, or at least the resolution thereof, but I do remember the characters in the world, and I agree with Erica that the world building in this is really great. I always enjoy sort of the Middle Eastern or Arabic-influenced fantasy stuff. I think I just have an affinity for that. I studied some of it in school, and I just really enjoy the world they're sort of building on here. The steampunk stuff, yeah, I can take it or leave it, but I think it works here, and I enjoy the way that they sort of, you know, that the world is fleshed out and turned into something that isn't just like, okay, it's Cairo in 1912, except there's magic, right? Like, there's other stuff going on here. It's a little deeper. They've sort of expanded it a bit from there. The characters are fun. I enjoyed sort of like there, as Erica described, Agent Fatma is a really interesting dynamic character, and there's a lot going on her, and she's got her like trainee partner there, which is just sort of a fun dynamic, because it seems like she like really looks up to her essentially, because she's, you know, one of the most prominent women in the force. And so she's kind of trying to, like, she's also the newbie, is sort of really smart too, but is kind of just trying to, you know, figure out how to find their place in the ministry. So all of those sort of, you know, quote unquote political wranglings are kind of entertaining as well. But yeah, I really like this world, and I think it's the star here. I mean, there's a reason I can understand why he has written all these different little stories in it, because it seems like a very vast, interesting setting in which you can do a whole bunch of stuff, and being able to sort of, you know, play with that in a variety of different ways, I think speaks to the fact that it's really fleshed out very well. So yeah, I enjoyed it, even if, as with Erica, I found the plot ultimately didn't matter as much as everything else that was going on there. But yeah, it's still kind of a fun book to read.
Yeah, and going back to what Erica said, this is the first book I've read in this universe, so I didn't even know there were others. So that's not a detriment at all. My lack of knowledge wasn't a hindrance to me. And in fact, it wasn't until, I don't know, halfway through where I was like, so did he just do a really good job of coming up with a backstory, or are there actually, like, are there prequels to this? And I did a little bit of research and was like, oh, I guess there's more I should maybe consider reading. So if you're thinking that you can't read this because you haven't read any of the short stories or novellas or whatever there that come before, that's not the case at all. Don't let that bother you. And yeah, the world building is good. The characters are good. I love anything set in Egypt, especially early 1900s, like Elizabeth Peters books. Love them so much. So this is kind of a more modern, less racist kind of way to scratch that itch. And so I was totally into it. And like, the plot is also good. There are parts of it that I feel were really predictable. Like the conclusion, much of the conclusion was like, oh yeah, saw that coming. That was really predictable, but there were aspects of it that were not predictable to me. So it was kind of a mixed bag in that respect, but there was enough of it that I wasn't expecting that it kept me interested, because it wasn't like reading a Mary Higgins Clark novel or something where it's like, oh, I know exactly how this is going to go. You know, it wasn't a very like procedural type of formulaic book. So I liked it, and I love I thought about Erica the entire time I was reading it because I was like, oh, yep, alt history, steampunky. Wonder if she's actually going to like it. So yeah. I'm really glad to hear that you did enjoy it.
Scott?
I wanted to like this book more than I did. So I like I will just echo what everyone said about world building and characters. That's all great. If you read this book like a mystery, it is not very good because the mystery is not very difficult to solve and you get frustrated when the characters have not already solved it because it is so obvious. And then the mystery is over, but the book isn't. And that annoyed me as well. But if you can, like the rest of the people who were singing the praises of the book, ignore the plot. It's really good. If the plot matters, it's not great. That's my quick thoughts on that
book. I was going to go there too, which is I love the setting of these books. I think the characters are a lot of fun. I think there's some intrigue, like when Fatma goes to, I mean, it turns out that her girlfriend is more than she appears, we'll put it that way. And there's like a cult and all that. Like there's all this like, whoa, you scratch a little thing and you find there's so much depth there. And all of that is really fun. But yes, it's not a very good mystery and it gets resolved and the book keeps going and it ends up in kind of like a kaiju battle at the end. And I thought it didn't work for me. It seemed unnecessary and I would have rather something on a lower scale. Like I really like how the book kind of hypes up the idea that this could be a catastrophic threat and like how could we even defeat somebody with all these powers, but then when it gets to the end it ended up being like an overpowered thing, and then there's the way that it gets resolved and it's like it seemed out of balance to me. It seemed like maybe it bit off more than it could chew in terms of that, and then in terms of the actual mystery of it, and there's sort of a like a head fake too that I didn't really appreciate, where there's like a scene kind of midway through the book where it feels like things are going to be revealed and it's going to be really bad for our heroes. And then the book is sort of like, it's that scene where they're like in the mystery person is going to speak to a crowd and there's a lot of trouble and danger there. And then it all just kind of like gets swept away so that they can reposition everybody for the next wave of plot. And that stuff didn't work for me at all. So I was carried along by the fact that I love the setting. The writing is fun. The characters are interesting. That's why I didn't like it as much as I wanted to. Same reason, Scott.
When I said before that I was kind of like in and out in terms of how much I was invested in the plot, Jason, that's exactly it. Yep.
Yeah. It's just
agreed.
And it's okay. It's a good book. It just it was better. I wanted it to be great, and the plot and the mystery and all of that needed to be better for it to be great instead of just good. But it's good, and I will read any book, any novel or novella or anything set in this universe at this point, because it's a really fun universe, and P. Jelly Clark is a very good writer. So I'll say that about it.
I will say that I actually, because I was not paying that much attention to the mystery as a mystery, I wasn't trying to read it as a mystery book at all, then I wasn't super disappointed by the fact that I did kind of figure out who the big bad was, which I never do because I'm usually really bad at that. And I was, when we got to the solving the mystery and the book kept going, I was actually relieved because that meant that it wasn't just a mystery book that I had happened to figure out. It was that there was more to it. And I actually, I quite liked the way that the ending sort of tied everything up. And I agree that it maybe didn't feel like the most balanced, but I enjoyed it anyway. I don't want to give anything away, but I liked the way that the culmination sort of came together.
Okay, time for one more break. It is another sponsor. This episode of The Incomparable also brought to you this time by LinkedIn. You know, time and place is everything, especially in marketing. But in today's age of a million messages per minute and not enough hours in the day, how do you really catch your target audience's attention? Fortunately, there is a simple way. LinkedIn can help you speak to exactly the right people at the right time. With LinkedIn becoming number one in B2B display advertising in the US, you've got a huge advantage to stand out against your competitors while nurturing customer relationships and growing your brand. LinkedIn delivers you quantity and quality. Its targeting tools let you reach your precise audience, right down to their job title, right down to the name of their company, right down to their location and more, which means your ads are being seen by exactly those who matter. It's no wonder companies of all sizes and sectors are using it. Take Main Street, a company who helps venture-backed startups claim tax credits. They increase their annual recurring revenue by $12 million using LinkedIn's marketing solutions. So scale your marketing and grow your business with LinkedIn advertising. And as a thank you to their customers for helping them grow three times faster than the competition, LinkedIn is offering a $100 credit on your next campaign. Go to linkedin.com/snell. I love it when they use my name in the URL. That is linkedin.com/snell to claim your credit. Thank you to LinkedIn for using the offer code SNELL, which I love, and for supporting The Incomparable. Now back to the podcast. Let's move on then to our third selection, which is called The Unbroken. It's by Sheree Clark. It is a fantasy novel about a, let's see if I can get this right. There is an empire that has taken over a desert country. The empire has no magic, but many of the outlying countries do have magic. The empire is basically a godless empire, but other cultures on the world have religions and they have magic. Our main character is a soldier who is from the deserty land that has been conquered by this empire, but is in the employ of the empire as a soldier and has returned to her place of birth where she was taken as a child as part of a force with a queen in waiting she's going to assert her power in order to prove herself as a worthy ruler. She's going to assert her power here in this conquered land. And one of the soldiers is Touraine, our main character. I mean, Luca, who is the queen in waiting, is our other main character. I'd say she's sort of second, but they're both the intertwined two characters here. First thing Touraine does when she gets there is execute somebody who knows who she is from when she was a child. So that doesn't go great. And there's an immediate sense that even though you might start this book thinking that the point of view character and the point of view, the her boss, they're going to be the center of this, right? It becomes very clear that they are oppressing these people who are trying to rebel, and that Touraine is going to be placed in a position to have to decide, is she going to reconnect with her people and help them rebel, or is she going to stay with the military? She gets betrayed by the military and sort of saved and becomes the attaché/bodyguard to the princess instead. All the rumors say that they have a relationship, which they don't, but they might, but they don't. And then she betrays her and goes off with the rebels who hate her guts because she's a turncoat who turned away from her people, but now she's back. But you know, that's no gratitude there. Thank you very much. There's a lot that goes on in the scale here is power and empire and an occupied territory and a rebellion. And there's just, this is a big book with a whole lot of stuff stuffed inside of it.
And maybe too much? Question mark.
I'd say definitely too much.
Here's the thing that gets me is the most interesting part of this book to me, the one that I was most intrigued about, is not addressed in this book because it's clearly setting up a series. And that's this whole idea that there's like that city across the river
that's been abandoned.
And there's like a library in there with books that nobody can get to.
Yeah.
And the one time they try to go, a crocodile bites a person's leg off. And you're like, okay, got to know more about what's happening over there.
Yeah.
That is not addressed for the rest of the book.
I will say, I also, in the stuff that I really, really liked in it, they go out in the desert and there's like the ceremonies and there's magic stuff. And the princess is out there along with Touraine, and it's like really like, whoa, this is like you thought this was this a little more mundane story, but it's not. There's some really weird stuff out on the outskirts. And then what they do is basically say, let's go back into the mundane stuff.
So the thing that frustrated me about this book is, for a book that is making a point, and that point is very clearly anti-colonial, it kind of is telegraphed from the get-go. And so as a result, I never felt really the conflict in terrain about, should I stay with this, you know, military that's raised me, or should I go and like join my people and fight back against this empire that has basically enslaved us? And it's like, well, duh.
Well, and don't forget, there's a weird interim step where she's like, oh, should I stay with this military? Oh, no, they're full of bastards and they've completely betrayed me and set me up and they're going to execute me. And then she gets saved by the princess. So she gets to go through it again, right? Which
right,
is,
exactly.
Do I betray the princess now?
She betrays kind of everybody at various points. And it's like, oh, man, just a lot. This is like bad decision theater. And I got frustrated because it felt like, I felt like her evolution was a foregone conclusion and therefore it did not interest me because I could see where it was going. Yeah.
It was boring. I listened to the audiobook. The audiobook is 14 hours long.
Yep.
I listened to it at 1.3 speed and I was bored almost the entire time I was reading it. So I, as a person, as a political being, I'm already on board with,
yep,
like, colonialism has done a lot of damage in the world. Like, you don't got to convince me. Totally on board with it. And still, like, this book did not do the work that I felt like it needed to do. Like, I don't know. It was just dull. And you're like, magic. This person has been, like, shot almost to death on death's doorstep, and then they sleep for a month and they're fine, and we don't talk about the magic. Yep. We don't talk about the
I'm so happy we none of us talked about this beforehand, and I have to say, not to tell the you know how I rated it the way I did on Goodreads thing, but I rated it 3 stars because I think it's very well written. I think the characters,
yes,
are memorable. I think a lot of the situations in the book are interesting and intriguing. And then I slept on it. And then in the morning, I opened up my iPad and I took it down to 2 stars because I said,
okay,
all of that is true, but it's super boring. Like, all of that is true, but it not 500 pages of it.
Thank you for clarifying that, because I swore to God that I saw you rated it 3 stars. And
then I
checked later when you're like, I didn't like it. I was like, wait a second, we rated it the same thing, but I thought it was okay. And he thought it was, oh no, he changed
that,
his
that
rating.
Was
oh, thank
for,
you
because
for
I because I was grinding on this book for so long, and I said, it's gotta matter that I struggled to get through this book. It did not fly for me. It was a real grind. And I think, you know, I needed to accept the fact that what Aline just came out and said, it's fine. It's really boring. It is way too slow, and not enough things happen. And some of the things that happen way too many times. How many times can somebody get captured and held and escaped and recaptured and reheld and then redeemed and then re-escape and be captured? And like, it is endless, and it's just too much of all of those things. It needed to be slimmer. It needed to be more right to the point. As Dan said, I think it would have helped with the telegraphing of her arc a little bit if we didn't have to grind through it for so long.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It hits the same beats kind of over and over again. And I thought that was frustrating. It starts really strong is the
it
other
does.
Thing. Like I was flipping through pretty well until I, you know, maybe hit the quarter or third mark, and I was like, where is this go? Like, and then I just really taper. Like, oh, come on, didn't we already cover this? So yeah,
this is the one that I really wanted to like, and I ended up doing the same thing on Goodreads. I think I liked it more than the rest of you guys, but I ended up doing the same thing with like the 4 stars, then down to 3 stars, because I just and I've read some of C.L. Clarke's short work and really, really liked it. So I knew that at least, you know, I was going to enjoy the way that the book was written, even if I didn't dig the story itself. And kind of like I said, I was just sort of like in and out in terms of how invested I was in A Master of Djinn. It was that, but more so in this, because yes, it did start really strong. I was very interested in where it was going. And I did also actually have the drawback, and I think we talked about this in the very last book club episode, where when the point of view character is a soldier, that's I have real trouble connecting to that. So I, you know, that's an extra layer between me and the story. I think I didn't really love the character, and I didn't particularly love Luca either, but I was really interested in them, which is, I don't know, it was a weird determination to sort of like figure out exactly how I felt, but I was just interested enough that I would keep reading. And then, yeah, I would hit a patch where I was just sort of like, oh, this kind of feels like a slog. And then something would happen and I would get kind of interested again, and then it would feel sloggy again. And, you know, like the way that you just described it, Jason, in terms of, you know, getting captured and escaping and captured and escaping. And it's like, I think I have a high tolerance for that because I watched so much Doctor Who from the 1970s. So I was kind of okay with that. But yeah, it did. It went on longer than I would have liked. And I, too, was immediately on board with the, you know, colonization is terrible and it, you know, needs to be brought down. And I agree. I really had trouble at the beginning. As interested as I was in what was happening, I had trouble really believing that Touraine had bought in that much. I mean, clearly she did, but I felt like the book had to hit me over the head with that a bunch because it just, I don't know, it felt like, well,
otherwise there
obviously
would be no, there would be no tension, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
The whole point is we're all like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's bad. Everyone agrees, yep. That's bad.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I liked it more than the rest of you, but all of the things that you have said were things that I recognized even while I was reading it. I will, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to read the next book. It seems like this is going to be a series because it does say series Magic of the Lost, you know, release number one. So if there's another one, I think I'm going to look at the page count before I decide if I want to read it. And I feel like if it's maybe edited down a little bit more, because I am interested in, you know, we have, so the, you know, they're there in Kazale, which is the deserty country, mm-hmm. and they have their magic. And then there are other places nearby that have different kinds of magic. And I'm interested in the magic-y stuff, and I'm definitely interested in that freaking
city.
Lost
yeah.
city
yeah.
that we didn't get to see. Like, I want to know what happens there. And honestly, I think the thing that really brought me back to the story toward the, you know, sort of beginning middle was I was very, very hardcore, like just shipping Touraine and Luca to get, like, I loved their relationship until Touraine did something that I just couldn't, like, you know, you guys talked about, she betrayed her. She basically betrayed everyone. The bad decision theater is the perfect way to put it, Dan, because I didn't buy it. Like, all of the decisions, I was just like, okay, well, this is clearly a story that's told from the perspective of somebody who just does not get it and doesn't know what they're doing, which makes it really hard to root for them as a protagonist from time to time. And I wanted them to get together. I wanted those two crazy kids to get together. And by the end of the book, I was like, maybe I don't actually want them to get together anymore because they both made bad choices.
I had the opposite feeling, which is I did not buy their romance at all. It did not work for me. Yeah, I don't know why. I felt like, well, the plot is put these two people together and therefore we're supposed to want them to fall in love. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't really see it. So maybe that was just me. I don't know. But it did not. I felt it was forced and I did not see, especially because there's a scene very early on where she like kind of is like, well, I'm her. I assume she wants me to be her like lover / concubine. And she like offers and then turns her down or something. And then there's a bit where there's like, you know, she has to like help her take because she is disabled, right? And so she has mm-hmm. like her leg injury. And so she's helping massage the leg at one point. And I'm like, this is the least sensuous in my feeling massaging. I did not buy the romance. It did not work for me. So I felt like it was kind of manufactured.
I feel like there's a missed opportunity there too, because you really do have the queen in waiting. I mean, when I describe it as the queen in waiting and she needs to prove herself or she's never going to, the regent's never going to let her be the queen. And she has to put down these people. And then Touraine, she's a soldier and they mistreat her, but she's got her soldiers who are like her, are from this place and are mistreated and she feels responsible for them. And so you end up in this situation where Luca, the princess, basically doesn't want to be the cruel tyrant, but she has to be the cruel tyrant in order to become the ruler, at which point she could like maybe chill out a little bit. And so she's trying to balance all these things, whereas the person who's from there, Touraine, is just like, no, like you can't do that. I get the conflict and the, you know, I want to do the right thing, but I can't do the right thing. And I want to protect my people, even though I'm in a terrible position. Like, all of that is in there. But in the individual notes, the individual execution of that relationship, especially, which is so fraught, it just doesn't, for me, it doesn't take flight. It's just kind of awkward and kind of misses, I think. Scott, do you have any thoughts about this one?
Well, I agree with everyone. I think it's
Scott is the king in waiting. He is very diplomatic.
It's true. Now, well, I think it's very ambitious, right? So I don't want to knock it for being
totally
quite ambitious. And I like a lot of the themes that are run throughout the book. I don't like the fact that I was hit over the head several times repeatedly by the themes over and over again when I thought that the situation was such that you didn't have to just spell out what I was supposed to think, but you could show me the situation and I could be led to thinking that, which is, I think, would have made this much better if maybe cut out 100 pages of it telling me what to think and just showed me the situation and I could have figured it out myself. But yeah, I don't know if I'll read the second one, but maybe it'll be nominated for something and I'll have to.
Yeah, that was my thought. Or again, maybe somebody will say, oh, in this one, they take a trip to the Forbidden City and learn all the secrets that are there. Like, okay,
maybe.
Right,
yeah, sure.
But there's a lot of interesting, tantalizing things in this book, but they're covered by many other things that are not so tantalizing. Yeah.
It's strange too, because, you know, Scott will know this, especially, which is sometimes we read books on this podcast because they're nominated for things and we hate them, right?
Yes.
Sometimes you read them and you're like, I hate this. Why did this get nominated? I don't feel that way about The Unbroken. I think it's well written with good characters, but it's so long and repetitive and slow and just a grind and to read. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't pull me along. And so I wanted to like it a lot and I didn't. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah. I have gone on record on this podcast many times saying that repetition is a valid artistic choice. And I think in this book, it was a poor artistic choice.
Yeah, it felt to me like she got lost in, the character got lost in the spin cycle, right? Of mm-hmm. I'm captured, I'm not captured, I'm captured, I'm not captured. And the goal by the author, by C.L. Clarke, the goal is to tempt her or have her come face to face with the thing she's trying to run from. And like, I get it, but it happens so many times. And I just at some point I was just like, come on now. Are we doing this again? Like Doctor Who, right, Erica? It's like,
yep.
Again, she's in jail. Again, the evil guy is going to come and threaten her. Okay, I guess we're doing this again.
Right. And to Dan's point, like the tension of having a character who is caught between two worlds and trying to make a decision, right? This empire raised me, so I should, and it brings some good things, so I should feel sympathetic towards it. Or my homeland that I have been ripped from, and they're doing horrible things over here. So there's a tension there. But this empire is just doing horrible things, and everyone's like, no, these are bad things. Like, there's no believable tension there.
Yeah, I also wanted I was very mixed on the relationship with her mother, which is a sort of ongoing theme. And I think it suffers from some of the same problems, which is it hits the same beat too many times of just like their relationship. It takes a long time to evolve to the point where you kind of are expecting it to go. And then it kind of happens all in a rush, I feel like. And I struggled with it. Like, I saw what they were doing, and I kind of thought it was refreshing to essentially have, you're expecting like her mother, who she's been, you know, ripped from, to be really like sad and welcome her back with open arms. And instead she's just like, no, I don't like you. I don't like what you stand for. I was like, that's all right. That's an interesting twist. I enjoyed that. But then it's just like, it just kept going. And there wasn't like, it took so long to get to a point where it's like, okay, maybe now they can kind of have a mutual respect, if nothing else. But it doesn't really feel like it evolves. It feels like it's a straight line
That's
and then just
is.
Takes a right turn. And you're like, oh, it's different now.
Yeah, I think that's what bothers me. And that's why I feel like boring was the right word. Is because I don't feel like there's character development.
Yeah.
it feels like the characters stay the same. They're just put in different situations that are then cyclical. But the characters, they don't change. None of them change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, even Luca, the princess, is at the beginning, she's not personality-wise and like in terms of learning things. You're right. She feels the same way, it seems like, at the very beginning. She doesn't want to come down hard on these people. She is trying to, like, right off the bat, trying to give them better working conditions. And like, she, at the end of the book, I think she still wants to be that kind of a person. Like,
yeah,
there hasn't been a big change. And I mean, yeah, I suppose we do technically get a change because at the very, very beginning, Terrain is, you know, really all go Empire, right. And by
unexamined
the end, isn't.
Life.
But it's not. Yeah, it's not like a character development beat. It's just I guess I changed my mind a little bit, but I'm still the same person.
And even there, it's not Go Empire, right? Because it's I'm a sand, which means
yes.
I am a discriminated against race in this empire. True. of light skinned people. I'm a dark skinned person, so I can't even aspire higher than my low station. I have been sexually assaulted by one of my superiors, and now I guess I'll execute this person who looks like me and knows my name. I mean, that's how it starts.
At the very beginning, no, she really is. She does have aspirations to advance. She wants to be the sand that actually becomes a captain and is promoted high enough that she can show the rest of the empire that, you know, just because her skin is dusky doesn't mean that she is uncivilized is how the god-filled nations are referred to. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing is, you're right. She loses that particular aspiration pretty quickly. And then after that, it's sort of just the one note.
And that aspiration is all in protection of the sands. Like, that is all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, that's never for her. That is all about. I mean, I'm not saying that she's intended to be like this altruistic character, but like, as I remember it, her overriding motivation for it is always like, oh, well, the sands are oppressed. Yeah, the sands are not treated well.
I must protect my fellow soldiers, basically, is what it comes back down to.
Yeah, if I can advance, then I can show them that sands can be treated better and should be treated better, right? Yeah. And so that never changes. It's just her approach to it changes because of the situation that she's in. It's never, I don't know, the overarching goal doesn't feel like it's that different to me because... Yeah, she wants to advance in the military, but it's not because she wants to advance in the military. She just wants better for her people. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
What you said makes sense to me.
Yes.
I don't know if it makes sense in the story.
There's so much. There's a lot of other stuff in there where it's like, I want to feel torn. Like, so the general is the character.
Right.
Who you're like... Mm-hmm. I understand you're trying to set me up to kind of want to like this person, but it was done very unevenly. And like you were told like, oh, we want to respect this person. This person's important. But also like you have that creeping doubt, right? Where everything that is described about what this person did to raise you is like, that doesn't seem really good.
No,
like,
yeah, you're abusive.
Yeah, it's all bad.
Yeah,
and you're like, but we're also, and I understand you want us to like a character who is not supposed to be a good person. But it failed in some ways for me because I was told we should like them and then shown all the reasons not to like them. And it's like, well, yeah, again, it's very obvious this person is not a good person, right? Like, I didn't feel the tension really because it was like one of these things was like, oh, they're a good person. Here's all the terrible things they've done. It's like, well, balanced out, I'm going to go with all the terrible things you just showed me.
Yeah, I felt like that relationship was very sort of super uneven, abusive relationship because, you know, it's clear that the general to some extent does care for Terrain, but it's always filtered through the, you know, undying loyalty to the Baladarian Empire. So I recognize that the book, I read it as the book wants me to understand that Terrain really likes the general, but I never felt like I was being told that I should, because I never did. I always just saw her as like I just kept looking at terrain and going, oh honey, this is a bad situation that you need to get out from underneath her. It doesn't matter if she cares about you like a pet, she's never gonna go to bat for you for real. So you just need to get out of that relationship. And she never did.
I think of one of the things that I kept coming back to as I was reading this book, and I had a lot of time to think about it because I was reading this book for a lot longer than I wanted to, is in many ways thematically, it reminds me of the Divine City series by Robert Jackson Bennett.
I thought the same thing.
And that series is just way better. I mean, that's just, it's better executed. Every book is better executed. It deals with a lot of the same themes. It's got a charismatic general who you're like, I don't know about this person, like, but I can understand why they're charismatic. Like, it's got so many similar elements, and I just think those books are having recently read them, they're just so much better executed. So unfortunately, this book just paled in comparison to those books too. So there's that.
Huh. Yeah. I've only read the first couple of those. I still have to read the last one. I guess now that you mention it, I'm seeing some similarities, but I don't know. They felt so vastly different to me in terms of the settings that
they're different in some ways, but I agree with Jason. The broad strokes are there because you have the same thing where there's like an empire that's ruling this other group
and
of people.
And no gods other places.
There's a sort of machinations character who is like, you know, physically like not somebody that people like, basically somebody underestimated because of their physicality, who turns out to be really smart. And it hits some of the
big notes in a way that I thought was more successful than this. Well, we've beaten up on this poor book enough. It got nominated for a Nebula Award. Good job. But
here's one thing I really loved about it, though. LGBTQ, like, completely neutral. Like, no, not a big deal. Same gender relationships, not a big deal. Bisexual, pansexual type relationships don't seem to be like big deal for people to be bi or pan. Loved that. Like, not even an eyebrow raised, no mention of it. It was just completely neutral. Yeah. And I loved that.
I also like the treatment of disability, the fact that, you know, there's one character who doesn't have her entire arm, and that's not like a big deal, and she is still a super badass.
She is.
And we do also have the queen in waiting, who is disabled, and it's treated in a way that felt real to me, because people looked at her being like, oh right, yeah, you know, and would give her looks and stuff, but also she had all the power because she's freaking royalty. So nobody ever dissed her for it.
I like that aspect of her character, and it's well like the whole backstory behind it and everything I thought was well done, and like the way that she's portrayed and the way that she acts and feels like she needs to put up a front even though she's, you know, suffering from pain and stuff like that. I mean, all of it came together, I thought, and that aspect of it was really, really solid, believable, and interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right. Before we go, I thought I'd go around quickly and see if anybody had any books that they've read recently that they might want to recommend. You know, we call this what are we reading? But of course, we're not reading anything now. We're recording a podcast. Just stipulate, it's mostly what have we read lately. Dan, have you read anything lately that you'd like to recommend?
Boy, have I, Jason.
You also weren't on the previous episode, so you've got a wider window than some of us do. I've been reading other nominated books since the last episode.
I finished two books recently that I quite liked. One of which I think some of you have read, The Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman, which is a murder mystery set in basically a retirement home in the UK. And it's delightful and fun and just very light. And if you enjoy just sort of like, you know, your sort of stereotypical British mysteries, it's kind of a fun twist on that. Richard Osman also is a, I guess, I don't know, TV personality in the UK. I knew him from a series of Taskmaster, but he also has hosted, I think, a variety of game shows and stuff like that. But it's just a very charming, cute little book. I also recently finished the most recent installment of the Rivers of London series, Amongst Our Weapons, it took me for a long time to realize that the title was a joke about the Monty Python skit about the Spanish Inquisition. And there are several other jokes in that book about that, and it's very funny. Anyways, I enjoyed
that. Ben Aronovich is a nerd.
Yeah. He is a nerd. And I love that series unabashedly. This one's good. I enjoyed it. And I think those are the two most recent things I've read.
Great. Aline, you also weren't on last time. Anything to recommend?
So we read Jade City a couple of years ago as a nominated novel, and it wasn't nominated since, or the sequels were not nominated, so I didn't read them because I was waiting for them all to come out, and they have all come out. So I finished the Greenbones saga, and that was pretty good. I binged all three books like in a row, and I was a little bit tired of kind of Jade Mafia stuff by the time I got to the
Jade
end
Godfather
of it.
Saga,
so just kind of.
I like that book too. I have gotten back to that series because it was nominated for something, so I read book one.
Yeah.
But I did like it. I should get back to that.
Yeah, the other two, they are good, but it's more of the same. So just kind of, if you need to kind of interleave it with some other stuff, that might not be a bad idea. I got them from the library, so I was on a deadline. I was like, yep, just going for it. But they were good. I read my first T. Kingfisher book, and I chose Minor Mage, and it was super cute. It's about a mage, a wizard, who is trying to, and he's a teenager, because T. Kingfisher is Ursula Vernon's YA
pseudonym
persona. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so he is, I think, 15 or so, off to save his region from drought, and his misadventures. He's not a great wizard. He is a minor mage, and it's really, really good. I like it. I'm excited to read more of her stuff and to dive into her grown-up books. And then another book that I read recently that I liked. I didn't quite love it, but it gave me such good Naomi Novik feels, was The Wolf and the Woodsman by Ava Reed. And it's a fantasy novel, debut novel, and it just kind of, it scratched that itch for me. And I'm really, really hoping that that the author gets more books, because I really feel like she's going to have more of those, like, I don't know how to describe Naomi Novik's fantasy novels, but like, they just have this really comforting, wrapped up in a warm blanket, but not necessarily like feel good feels. Help me out here, y'all. Like, how do you describe them? They're so good.
I think you're right that they are. Yeah, they're not like warm, fuzzy, feel good, but they are comforting in a way, because they're you know, riffing on fairy tale type things that are so sort of deep seated for somebody who's been reading the types of books that we have for so long, that it takes some of those beats that just feel, you can feel those beats in your bones, but it does interesting and different things with them. So it's comforting and unexpected at the same time, which is a nice trick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like Beauty and the Beast. It's not Disney, but it's comforting and comfortable while also being love. I don't know. They're lovely. Okay. Just, it's a good book. Check it out.
Okay. Scott, you read a lot of books. Do you have any to recommend?
Sure. I will say, if you have beats in your bones, consult a physician.
or Dr. Dre.
That's your position.
Or stop eating so many beets.
They're delicious. Very earthy. I like a beet. Anyway, mystery books are something that I enjoy reading. There are many, many of them. And so there are many categories of them. Some of them focus on, you know, intricate plotting and locked rooms, and others focus on unlikely protagonists with particular, careers. So, you know, there are many that people run bookstores and people get murdered in these small towns all the time. This one pictured, if you will, a disgraced stage magician moves back home to her father's house. Her father owns a company that specializes in creating secret rooms for rich people in their houses. And on the job site, they find her stage double murdered and stuffed inside a wall that hasn't been touched in 100 years. And that is Under Lock and Skeleton Key by G.G. Pandian. And it was a delight.
Now I want to read that. That's a great setup.
Yeah, well done. Sounds great.
Well summarized, Scott.
Yeah.
There you go. It's a lot of fun. And that's the, I've read a bunch of other things, but that one is fun. And that's the one people should read.
All right. Erica?
Well, I will say, if you have read Unbroken and liked the way it was, like the way the words were used, but maybe didn't dig the novel length type thing, I just want to recommend a couple of short stories by C.L. Clarke from Uncanny Magazine, because I just read the story called Your Eyes, My Beacon, being an account of several misadventures and how I found my way home. It's a very long title, but it's a short story. And I read it for the most recent, I think it was the most recent Uncanny podcast, and I really enjoyed it. And then I also, because when I picked up The Unbroken, I was like, why does the name C.L. Clarke sound so familiar? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, because they wrote that story that I just read. And then I was looking at their bibliography on the Uncanny website and realized they also wrote You Perfect Broken Thing, which, don't read it unless you're like ready to cry. It's very, very short, but it hurt, but in a really, really good way. So maybe if you need some catharsis, check that out. I haven't gotten very far in it yet, but I just started reading Rosebud by Paul Cornell. And I will just read you like this little blurb. It says, the crew of the Rosebud are currently, and by force of law, a balloon, a goth with a swagger stick, and some sort of science aristocrat, possibly, a ball of hands, and a swarm of insects. And that is, like, if that kind of weirdness is up your alley, this book is up your alley. I'm not that far into it, but it is, like, that's a perfect explanation of just how kind of strange it is. It's like a microscopic ship that is supposed to be mining, and it runs into something spooky, and they have to work together to figure out what to do with it. But the last thing that I want to mention, and Jason has already mentioned this in a What Are We Reading section, uh-huh, I think it was even on the last one, uh-huh, is I read Winter's Orbit by Everina Maxwell. Oh my God. Like, I'm not going to go into detail because Jason has.
I'm two chapters in, so right, please don't.
Well, Dan, it's the most Vorkosigan-y thing.
That's why do you think I picked it up?
Yep.
Yeah. If anything is going to get me to read those books, it's probably you guys saying that, because this book was it was absolutely perfect for me as a reader. I have not fallen that hard head over heels for a book in quite a while. Like, every time I wasn't reading it, I just wanted to go back to reading it. And Jason, you mentioned that there's a romance in it, and I have been sort of veering toward more romantic stuff lately, just for the comforts, and some of like the tropiness of the romance. And I say that like in a good way, because mm-hmm, when I want romance, I want certain romance tropes. And, you know, the prince who's forced to marry, and the poor guy who is a widower and is then forced to marry the prince. And, you know, first of all, royalty. I'm just a sucker for a royalty sort of romance thing. But then the, you know, not understanding, you know, one of them likes the other one, and they both like each other, but they can't see it for reasons that make really good sense. And that's one of the things where, like, sometimes I'm watching a romance and I'm like, oh yeah, this isn't holding up. But every character beat in these books makes perfect sense. And at the same time, there's a really, really interesting story happening. So it's like I get the characters and I get the plot, both in one book. Yay. So yeah, I just super, super highly second the recommendation for Winter's Orbit because it was great. And I immediately pre-ordered her next book, which is not a sequel, but it does take place in the same universe. So I'm excited.
Nice. Well, thanks to Katie Mack, who recommended that book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I just spreading the word, spreading the word. Well, Erica, you can read One Last Stop by Casey McQuiston next. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I have that on my list.
Another romance that I read. I don't have any romances to recommend this time. Sorry, everybody. But Dan, I think you're going to like that book. I'm looking forward to hearing how you like that one because it is so...
I'm reading it right now.
So reminiscent to in some ways of those Lois McMaster Bujold books. Really quickly, I have three recommendations. Rethinking Fandom by Craig Calcaterra is a really fun, pretty quick read about sort of sports fans in the 21st century sort of taking back control of the relationship they have with sports and making it less unhealthy than it may have become. Really, from a professional sports writer, a book about how we maybe should take sports a little less seriously, admit all their flaws, and try to create a scaffolding that allows us to enjoy them for what they are and not more than that. So Rethinking Fandom by Craig Calcaterra. Good stuff. I'm contractually obligated, I think, to mention, if Scott doesn't, a book by KJ Parker. So I'll throw in the one that we haven't talked about, I think, which is How to Rule an Empire and Get Away with It, book two.
Very good.
Of the Siege trilogy, which involves an actor who is hired to pretend to be an emperor, but nobody really remembers what the emperor looks like because the emperor was a front for somebody else to run the city. And you can pretty much guess what happens there because the actor says, maybe I could be the emperor. And it goes from there. It's good stuff. All those books are great. Those books are all great. Thank you, Scott. Full credit to Scott for turning me on to those. And last book I'll recommend is a book called All of the Marvels, A Journey to the Ends of the Biggest Story Ever Told by Douglas Wolk, who is a guy who read all 27,000 plus Marvel superhero comics.
Oh my gosh.
And
had time to write a book.
And wrote a book trying to thread together the various storylines of Marvel's history. And what he learned along the way, making the argument that it is a unique work of collaborative art, creating a 500,000-page interconnected story over the course of 60 years. It's actually a lot of fun because what he does is let me tell you about the Avengers, or let me tell you about Black Panther. And he talks about the history and like how they were created, and then how they were portrayed, and then how they were changed, and trying to kind of interconnect it and make sense of it, but also have it sort of recognize the different things that are going on. I think it's a very entertaining book. I'm reading it in short bits. I read a few chapters and it's like, okay, that's enough of that for a little while, and then I come back to it. But it's actually been a great deal of fun, and I'm glad he read them and I didn't. I mean, I've read many thousand of them, but not all 27,000, let me tell you. So it's a fun book if you're interested in diving into the insanity of Marvel Comics since 1961 and how they all connect. And that brings us to the end of the book club. But don't worry, there's another one. Part three is coming. We're going to read Light from Uncommon Stars, Project Hail Mary, and She Who Became the Sun, all Hugo nominees. And some short fiction too, probably. At least Erica and I will read some short fiction. I know we're good for it. We do that. It's a service we provide. But until we reconvene in a couple of months for part three, let me thank my panelists who read three whole books to be on this podcast. It's not an insubstantial amount of work, so I appreciate it. Aline Sims, thank you.
Felt like a Christmas miracle.
It was good to have you back. Dan Morin, thanks for joining us.
You know what I always say, better to read three books than write three books.
Yeah, you always say that. Scott McNulty, thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
And thanks for reading all the books.
I've read them all.
Yeah. And remembered none of them, but that's okay.
It's true.
Yeah. And Erica Ensign, thank you.
I want to take the next 3 months off and just read all the books you guys talked about and all of the awards books. Just books, 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 books. All
books. That's books. I couldn't have said it better. Books. And thanks to everybody out there for listening to this episode of The Incomparable. We'll be back in a week. Goodbye.